Hello and welcome to the Freestyle podcast series, bringing you real stories from those living with diabetes. We hear about the challenges they face and hope to provide some inspiration for living your best life. I'm Claudine and today we're talking to Elise Quarrington, a triathlete and sports model, whose motto for life is "I have diabetes, diabetes doesn't have me." After being surprised by her diagnosis aged 24, now she loves talking about diabetes and says that living with type 1 has made her stronger. Please remember that before making any changes to your diabetes management, discuss these with your healthcare team first. Elise, hi, and welcome to the Freestyle podcast. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So you're a triathlete and a sports model. Was sport always a big part of your life growing up?
My dad and my brother used to row, so I kind of just followed in their footsteps, and my sister then joined in as well. So I tried everything when I was a kid. I tried every sport under the sun, and then kind of fell in love with rowing, which I used to do. I did it for about 10 years. And then I suffered an injury, so I had to change sport at university. So that's how I found triathlon. I joined the swimming team first, and then kind of found the triathlon club through it. And I think swimming's always been my strongest point, but I then found the love for cycling and for running as well, even in the great British weather.
After your sporting childhood, and then obviously you reach the age of 24, you're working hard as an athlete and suddenly everything starts to change. Can you just tell us a bit about how that happened?
Yeah, I mean, it took months for me to be diagnosed. That was kind of through my own fault. I guess nobody ever kind of wakes up and thinks that they've got diabetes. So over a couple of months, I lost my sight, lost loads of weight. I was super tired and I was drinking probably about 8 litres of water a day. I just couldn't find enough water to drink. And then overnight, I kind of woke up at 2 a.m. and drank about 3 glasses of water. And I suddenly thought, okay, this isn't right. So yeah, then I went to the doctors and told them all of my symptoms. And I think my mum said I looked, obviously wasn't looking very well. And I said to the doctor, I think I have a thyroid problem because it can show in quite similar symptoms. And they said, okay, we'll test your blood sugar as well. And you'll hear from us in a few days. So keep your phone on. And then an hour later, I was out on a run actually, and she called me back and she said, how are you running? You should be in a coma. So yeah, she said to go to the hospital. And that's kind of where everything changed. So I went, you know, probably an hour or two after seeing the doctor, I went to the hospital, and that's when they said, you know, you've got diabetes, and they were trying to figure out kind of what type it was, and because it was quite a late onset, and they started me on insulin. And I mean, that was the day that everything changed, really.
You mentioned there about having crazily high sugar levels, and DKA generally is, for a lot of people, what is that wake up to having diabetes? When talking to the doctors, did you notice that you had had symptoms for possibly a longer time that you just hadn't?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think because it doesn't run in my family at all, there's no history of it. And I've always done loads of sport. Not that, you know, that would stop me from getting it, but they said that I probably have had it for quite a long time. But me doing sport and being so active all the time has kind of kept it under wraps a bit.
So you've just been diagnosed at the age of 24. Obviously, it's a life-changing diagnosis. So what was the first thing that you thought when you got home?
I was on the way to a friend's wedding when I went to the doctor's. So I was in full, when I went to the hospital. So I went to the doctor's in the morning and then kind of got ready to go, went for a run, got ready to go to the wedding. So I was in full wedding attire and they called me saying, you've got to go to the hospital. So I went to the hospital in a nice dress and heels. They obviously started me on insulin, so I was there for a good few hours and they thought about admitting me, but because I was reasonably well, you know, they let me go home. So I made the reception of my friend's wedding.
Most important bit.
Exactly, that's where the cake is. Yeah, so I don't really remember the first few days after that. It was all a whirlwind, and it's, you know, I'm learning how to do injections, and I had the biggest fear of needles. I passed out getting my ears pierced when I was 18, which is quite embarrassing. So I had to get over that, and my parents and my sister did my injections for the first few weeks because I just couldn't bring myself to do it. it was just a whirlwind the first few days, and getting your head around the fact that this is life, you know, now. Just learning how to kind of manage it yourself was hard.
So that's really interesting, actually, that you were saying it is loads of information. So with you being diagnosed quite late on in your life compared to obviously a lot of people who are diagnosed as a child, I think your outlook on obviously the amount of information must have been really overwhelming, that it was you and you had to kind of manage it yourself. How's the support network around you? You know, how have you reached out to different people to help?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so lucky. I've got parents who I lived with at the time, and now I've got my partner, and the support system of them is just so important and has been so, so useful, obviously. Yeah, for the first couple of weeks of starting insulin, my parents had to check on me every night. So I think that must have been the toughest time for them as well. It took probably a good 6 months to a year to start thinking, well, I'm not actually the only diabetic in the world. There's probably other people going through this. And I didn't openly talk about my diabetes so much when I was within the first year of diagnosis. But then I kind of started after that. I started looking on Instagram for other people, I guess, with it. There's a lot of support networks out there. I think obviously my healthcare professionals are great, but you know, they're not people living with diabetes. So finding other people that are going through the same thing, no one knows it like another diabetic, has been really, really important.
So moving on to your athletic and sporting side, nutrition's been a big part of your life, being sporty. This is obviously, again, a big part of diabetes and managing your intake versus your insulin levels. How did you find that your nutritional knowledge prior to having diabetes then helped manage your diabetes?
Yeah, it definitely helped. And I guess it's like everything, having an education around the subject's going to help. I think it's very different in the sense that kind of race and athlete nutrition is going to be different to diabetes nutrition, but kind of having an education and awareness around the subject has really helped. And I know that, you know, from sport, that different foods have different effects on my body. And it's the same with your insulin requirements. Obviously, a different food is going to have a different effect. So it's been difficult in the sense of finding things that are good kind of pre-race to fuel me, but not to make my sugar go too crazy. So I think it's just added another factor into nutrition.
Do you follow any kind of specific diet?
For racing, yes. I have kind of, I know what works for me with regards to kind of eating pre-race and when I need to eat pre-race. So I've just had to work out my kind of insulin requirements around it. And whenever I race, I make sure that I start a bit high, so my blood sugar runs a little bit high, because I know that, you know, with triathlons, it's different to a short swimming race. The triathlon's a couple of hours long. I know that I'm going to gradually start to come down. So I do have a set thing that I know works for my race, and I've kind of had to work diabetes around that.
Well, that's interesting then. So you've not changed your racing style, obviously, to match diabetes. You've definitely made the diabetes fit into...
Yeah, I've had to do it the other way around.
So living with type 1's not just a physical challenge, it's also quite an emotional and mental one. What's your experience been around the mental well-being of having type 1?
I've learned kind of over the years, I've had it for 3.5 years now, that mental health with a long-term health condition is huge. And at different stages of my journey, I guess, it's been different problems that I've faced with regards to mental health. I think obviously at the beginning, it's kind of overcoming, okay, my life's completely changed now, this is it. Whereas now it's more kind of day-to-day frustrations, and obviously there's kind of like the long-term health worry. But I think there needs to be a greater emphasis on mental health support for type 1s. You know, I was diagnosed at 24, and that was a whirlwind of a journey. I couldn't imagine being kind of a teenager and going through all of the hormonal changes and having this on top. Must be very, very difficult. And it just emphasized how important having a good support system around me was. They go through it with you. My parents did, my partner does. They definitely get the bad side of my emotions a lot. So, and kind of learning to accept it, and that, you know, you are slightly different to the average human, but I mean, what's normal anyway, I guess. I think it's been a tough journey, but it's definitely strengthened me mentally as well.
I know you mentioned there you've been diagnosed later on compared to a teenager or a young child. Do you think maybe that you were treated differently having a later diagnosis in an attitude possibly from the healthcare professionals that you're old enough to kind of cope with this and there possibly wasn't the support offered that say someone who was diagnosed at 12, 13 would get?
Yes, yeah, maybe. Obviously, I don't know because I don't know what it's like for a 12 or 13 year old to be diagnosed, but I think, yes, there was an element of I'm older and kind of aware of the dangers a bit more, I guess.
Because that's quite an interesting look, I guess, at it, of the journey that people go on being diagnosed later in life compared to someone, as I say, who's kind of had that more hand-holding from an early age, and the transition then moving from the parent managing the diabetes to the child. Whereas I think talking to you about it, it seems that your parents had all that support requirement, but they weren't possibly getting all the information from the healthcare team because it was coming through you.
Yeah. And I think my parents were kind of really good emotional supports, whereas I then kind of got on with more of the physical side of it, I guess. Whereas as a kid, the parents would probably take over a bit more of the physical management and have to take on the emotional side as well.
No, definitely. I think it's a very, as I say, just a very interesting look at the different stages of diagnosis. So you talked about your partner's there for the days that you find it challenging. What do you do with things when things aren't quite going your way?
I mean, I cry a lot. So if I'm having a bad day, I'll just cry. But that seems to kind of get me over it, I guess. Everybody, no matter how well controlled you are, everybody has bad days. Even if you're the best diabetic in the world, you're going to have bad days. Sometimes food just doesn't agree with you. I think kind of accepting that you have bad days has made it a lot easier. And I've only in the last year been able to kind of accept that. And I know, okay, I'm just having a bad day and my sugars aren't just running high for no reason whatsoever. They're just doing it. I might be eating the exact same thing and doing the exact same amount of sport and they just run high. And once I accepted that, it's made things a lot easier. And, you know, talking about it to my partner or parents or friends or reaching out to other type ones, you know, I had it the other day and I think I drank some squash that I thought was sugar-free, but it wasn't. And, you know, probably a year ago, I'd been really upset with myself and quite annoyed that I did that and I was so stupid to have done that. But now I just, you know, I sent a photo of my double figure in blood sugar to a group of diabetic friends that I've got and we all just laughed about it. And, you know, it's much more like healthy, positive way to be able to get through diabetes, I guess.
Yeah, and I think having that acceptance yourself, as you say, is probably like one of the big hurdles, isn't it, to overcome. Obviously, we're talking about your support network, and I believe that you have a lovely companion who you are training to help you and support you with your diabetes. Can you tell us a bit more about your dog?
So over lockdown, I mean, my partner and I have wanted a dog for a little while, and we thought it's a good time to get on and start training my four-pawed friend. He's a black German shepherd, and at the moment he's 6 months old. He is the source of all of my troubles, but also he's great. He's lovely to have around. I have done a lot of research around German shepherds and their ability to smell out when you're all blood sugar drops, and I don't actually need him to do it because I haven't, touched wood, yet had any very bad experiences with hypos, but I thought it'd be a nice party trick to be able to show people. And I believe they can smell out changes in your blood sugars before you can feel anything. And at the moment, obviously, I've got the Freestyle Libre system, which gives me indications if I know that I'm going down, but hopefully Logan will be able to smell it out before even that will be able to tell.
So they can literally just smell from your scent, I guess, when your sugars are decreasing?
Yes, yeah. So at the moment, I'm swabbing the inside of my cheek and my armpits, which doesn't sound very glamorous, and keeping all of these samples in the freezer. God help anybody who opens my freezer door. So then I've got to kind of train him the difference between my normal smell and that smell. And we taught him how to speak on command, so he, not literally speak, he can bark at us. That would be a real party trick. When he notices this smell, ideally in the long run, and then he'll start barking at me. So I'll kind of alert me to go and check He has no idea what we're doing at the moment, but he thinks it's really fun. So check back in a year and I'll let you know how it's gone.
Yeah, and I understand you're hiding bits of food around the house to help him get his sniff technique.
Yeah, you've got to kind of teach him to use his nose and that smelling things out is a good idea. So hiding bits of chicken and sausages around the house and teaching him to sniff them out. So it's a fun little project.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it sounds like it could be a great asset, obviously, to your already amazing support network, but something that's a little bit different from the norm, I guess. So you said that living with diabetes has made you stronger. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, both mentally and physically, it's changed me for the good, really. I mean, somebody's asked me recently if I resented or didn't like having diabetes. And obviously, I didn't choose to have diabetes, but there's so many positives that are coming from it now, kind of later down the line. And I'm so much mentally stronger. I've been a lot more resilient. I've had to face daily challenges as well as long run challenges. You know, diabetics are said to have to make an extra 180 decisions a day, which I couldn't believe at first, but now I definitely think that's a minimum amount of decisions. And, you know, facing my fears and like learning to overcome injections and just generally being a lot stronger and a lot more appreciative of my other organs and the rest of my body that's working so hard without me having to ask it to do anything.
Yeah, and I guess you said very early on, you know, you lost your sight that kind of triggered your going to the hospital to get your original diagnosis. That must have been a really, really scary experience for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I lost it to the point where everything was very blurry. Luckily, I didn't have any long-term damage with it. I was very lucky in that sense. But yeah, it was a very scary, scary first year. And I still have my scares with it now. You know, a hypo just completely knocks you off on the floor. There are a lot of day-to-day challenges like that that are scary. But, you know, nothing. I just believe that I haven't been handed anything that I can't take on. And I've now facing it thinking, you know, I've got this and it's not going away. So I might just as well make the most of it and get out there and support others. It makes me feel good supporting others, I guess.
Yeah, so you're 3 years now into your diabetes diagnosis. What's the most important thing that you've learned so far?
Yeah, I mean, we touched on it a lot, I guess, just how important a support system is. And to give yourself time, really, it took me a good year to kind of come to terms with what this is. But yeah, just how important having people around you that are, you know, either non-diabetics or diabetics or both, if you can, just reaching out to people online or any of your friends or family. Just my support system has gotten me through the hard days.
So if you could sit down with someone who's just started going through this journey, or sit down with yourself 4 years ago to talk to that version of you, what would you say to them and what would your advice be?
I guess that it's okay that it's going to take time to come to terms with it. You know, and some people 5-10 years down the line probably still haven't come to terms with it, and that's fine. Like, just give yourself time to get used to it. And for me, like, researching about it really helped, because I like knowing what it is and why my body's reacting to different types of exercise in different ways. And yeah, to engage and get out there and reach out to people. I've found a real kind of positive side in trying to help other people or teenagers that are just friends of friends or colleagues or sons and daughters of colleagues that I'm kind of trying to help through it. And I've found a really kind of positive side in that. And yeah, just to kind of get out there and start reaching out to people, it's really, really helped.
Because we see quite a lot of people as well who possibly were diagnosed early on in life, you know, teenager, and kind of just let diabetes get on with itself and were put their head in the sand kind of approach. And then around the same age as you, 24, 25, kind of have refound that need to then manage their diabetes better. So do you find speaking to people like that who are kind of starting the journey again, you know, they got different advice, or would you?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I need their support as much as they'll need mine. You know, it's a two-way thing. And yeah, it's so interesting hearing how other people manage it and their kind of tips with it. And, you know, everybody's different, and diet tips are kind of something that will react differently to every diabetic, but it's more just mental health help and support, and, you know, things about where to inject that hurts less, and or where to put, you know, your sensors or whatever you've got, you know, just those kind of life hacks, I guess, from other diabetics that are really useful.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. As you say, you read all these things online, you're like, oh, never knew that. So do you find you get asked any really odd questions from people, passers-by, or people who don't really understand diabetes?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I think because I've got the Freestyle Libre sensor on my arm, well, one person's actually walked up to me and hit the back of my arm because they thought there was something stuck to me. And somebody else has been asked me if I've been tagged by the police. A few people ask if it's a nicotine patch. So yeah, you do get a few odd questions, but it gives you a chance to kind of educate them. And
do you find if you spot someone with a sensor on, you're automatically like, you're like, oh,
definitely. Yeah, definitely. You've got an instant connection with someone, and you literally have crossed the street to go and talk to somebody before I've seen us got it on.
And have you been asked any funny questions by friends when you've been out?
Yes, yeah, more kind of pet peeves relating to diabetes, of people asking if you should be eating what you're eating. Yeah, I definitely get annoyed at people asking or saying, like, maybe stating that you shouldn't be eating certain things.
Common misconception, isn't it?
Yeah.
That people with diabetes can't eat sweets.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's all we've got time for on this episode. Elise, thanks so much for joining us and sharing your inspiring story. If you want to know more and follow Elise on her journey, you can find her on Instagram, where she's known as the Athletic Diabetic. That's the.athletic.diabetic. And if you want more information about living with diabetes, then check out our fantastic education site, Freestyle Progress. There you can find the Freestyle Libre Academy, tutorial videos, webinars, the rest of the podcast series, and lots more. That's all online at progress.freestylediabetes.co.uk. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
The information provided is not intended to be used for medical diagnosis or treatment, or as a substitute for professional medical advice. Please consult your physician or qualified health provider regarding your condition and appropriate medical treatment. Individual symptoms, situations, and circumstances may vary.